Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
The first degree.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
Hey guys, welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter and next to Billy Jensen.
And that's just going to be my intro from now on because nobody needs to know anything else.
Yes. Totally.
Love it. Today we're going to discuss a subject that was essentially the biggest crime of last year and in part sparked the Me Too moment. A lot of this started when Republican nominee for president was revealed to have said that he can do anything to a woman when you're famous. Grab them by the pussy. It was the biggest news story of the election cycle. Hillary used it in attack ads, but he was still elected. Groping was having its moment, and not like a queer eye, like a moment.
But not like, yeah, hair blowing in the wind moment.
Like a bad moment. So we're going to learn that in the criminal realm, while the motivations for groping are different than rape, it can be a precursor to rape and sexually motivated murder.
Now, in doing research for this episode, I read a ton of stories on serial groping attacks. So take a listen to just some of the headlines that I was able to access in just a quick search. This is how prevalent these types of crimes are. And I don't think people realize how often they are happening, how severe they are. And police know that these attacks have the propensity to escalate as well. And you can just hear this. Many of these groping attacks also have a violence component off the bat.
He's brazen, doesn't even cover his face. Take a look at the security video. This was provided to us by the LAPD. They released just a little bit of this in one of the stores. He walks up to women who are unsuspecting. They're shopping, and then he just grinds his body up against them, sometimes from behind, sometimes in the front. The concern, of course, is not just that this is scaring women, but that this behavior could get much worse.
He does not attempt to hide his face. He does not attempt to hide his identity. His calmness concerns us, and we do not want his behavior to escalate.
A groper is on the loose in Federal Way. Police worry the attacker is gaining momentum and want to stop him before he does something worse.
The man police are looking for targets women walking alone. Usually they're getting on or off buses. The victims are all petite. Girls as young as 14. The oldest victim was 46.
His MO is he'll approach the victim from behind and then use one arm to control them and then grope with the other hand.
Throughout Fairfax County for months now and has somehow escaped police.
These attacks are becoming increasingly frequent and brazen. Tonight took place about 6 in front of this apartment building.
Another woman attacked. It's the 10th such assault by the same suspect since September.
Police say they are so anxious to make an arrest because often in cases like this, the suspects become increasingly aggressive and violent.
22-year-old Bonnie Curry has a broken wrist, torn shoulder ligament, and deep bruising to her femur. She also has haunting memories of how she got like this, saying a strange man groped her and pushed her onto the subway tracks just after 4 a.m. Friday.
A lot of the murderers that certainly I have studied and covered throughout the last couple decades, some of them have started as gropers and moved on to much, much more horrifying things. You know, we actually encountered one of them with the Golden State Killer and somebody that was actually trying to use him as cover for MO. And then he escalated the Tourniquet Killer.
Right. So the Golden State Killer at one point was the East Area Rapist in Sacramento between 76 and 79. At the time, a couple copycats were operating, trying to copy the MO to have it be assumed that they were this killer so they wouldn't be singled out necessarily. And there was a guy named the Tourniquet Killer.
Wait, so he was a copycat of...
Yes. Okay. So, well, in the 70s, he was.
Did he, like...
He copied the rape MO.
Okay.
Before he escalated to murder.
Right.
But before he was raping, he was a groper in the 70s and 80s. And he would generally prowl on women on bike paths and things like that and would grope. And clearly there was just an escalation here where he would do that, and then he turned to rape single women, and then he would rape the couples, same way the East serial rapist did.
Yeah.
And then he escalated to murder. And he was actually the first execution of 2018, which is interesting. Yeah. So he was just recently executed, and there was a lot of weirdness surrounding his execution. The things he had, like, all these spontaneous utterances and said a bunch of weird stuff.
Like right before he died?
Yeah, like he's strapped to the, you know, we'll have to do maybe a whole episode on him. So stay tuned.
I don't know what he said.
Yeah.
Right.
And why'd they call him the tourniquet killer?
Well, because when he would suffocate his victims, he would use like a bamboo stick or something to twist like a tourniquet to control the pressure on the victim's neck, a toothbrush or a bamboo stick to tighten or loosen the ligature. So this is clearly a very sadistic way of murdering, because you know that he took his time with this and would loosen or tighten based on what was getting his rocks off at the moment. So, yes. Groper. See, this is a thing. It's like, there are a bunch of psychologists we researched for this episode that said they can't anticipate when a groper is going to escalate, but they sometimes do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy named Vernon J. Gerbeth, and he's an author and a former New York Police Department homicide squad commander. And he's written on this topic extensively. And he said that gropers were found among the rich and the famous, politicians, athletes, actors, as well as, of course, the anonymous. And the personality of these people can run from introverted to reclusive to gregarious and extroverted. One thing that I thought he said was particularly poignant on this topic, and he said, quote, "I can't tell you if every panty thief, peeping Tom, voyeur, or groper will become a serial rapist, but in every lust murder or serial murder I have researched or investigated or heard of, there is a background of this activity in each offender's history." So that says quite a lot. You know, not every groper will turn into a sexual offender or murderer, but every single one of these lust murderers started as a sexual offender. So you really have to look at this behavior. It's terrifying.
Clearly, Billy, we have another example.
Andre Chikatilo, who was considered the Red Ripper. Yeah, this is a Soviet crime. I remember reading this book as a college student, and he killed and murdered at least 52 women and children between 78 and 90 Soviet Russia. And Soviet Russia, this was one of those deals where Soviet Russia did not want to admit that they had a problem, because everything was supposed to be perfect in Soviet Russia. He would cruise the train stations and then be able to find his victim and then do that and then bring them out into the woods and then kill them. You know, after his capture in, I think, in 92, you know, he talked about he had been doing this for 12 years, murder. He had cannibalism going on. And he started after he was fired as a teacher, and he was fired for groping his students. And one of these incidents involved an encounter with, there was a 15-year-old student, and he groped her breasts and genitals, and he ejaculated as the girl was sort of struggling against his grasp. Months later, I think he sexually assaulted another teenage girl who he had sort of locked in his classroom. So he was fired from that school for these two groping incidents. And then right after that, he was hired at another school where the groping of male and female students continued. And so this guy escalated to the nth degree, because he became, a lot of times you don't really hear about Chikatilo because he was Russian, but he's on, you know, for anybody that ever makes a top 10 list of serial killers that knows the worldwide serial killers, he's always going to be on there.
That's insane.
Well, he engaged in cannibalism too,
yeah,
right?
Yep, yep.
He was like the worst. Another guy who deserves his own episode.
Yeah.
Really.
I've never even heard of him before.
Yeah, he's terrifying. They're not the only two, obviously. There's also Wesley Dodd, and he was a Washington-based predator that graduated from relatively harmless acts of exhibitionism and groping to super sadistic child molestation and murder before he was caught. And as a child, he started with dabbling. You know, he would flash other children from his window.
And that was when he was like a kid,
That was
too,
when
right?
he was a kid.
That's
it's so funny. This is totally like nature-nurture example of nature, where it's like, this is a kid, and like,
that was not a learned thing.
Yes, and everything
whatsoever.
I read was that he came from a very normal upbringing,
right.
And flashing other children from his window, and then he graduated from exposing himself to much more aggressive actions, like fondling, groping children on the street, and the groping continued, and his fantasies became increasingly violent over the years. Diaries that resurfaced after he was caught indicated that he wrote about wanting to eat the genitals of his victims, things like that. And he eventually progressed from molesting to murdering, and he killed two brothers named Cole and William Neer. And then he transitioned to torturing and murdering, which he did to his third victim, Lee Zelli. After he was arrested for trying to abduct a boy from a movie theater, the police went to his house and found a homemade torture rack in his home that had not been used.
It hadn't been used.
No, but it was perfected. Apparently it was very complicated, and it was this really intricate device. And clearly this botched abduction,
right,
that was meant to be his the first person.
And this guy Wesley Dodd, if you ever see some interviews with him, they're horrific.
Really?
One of the kids, the kid ran away. When he finally caught up with them, the kid said, "I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry I ran away." And it's one of the most harrowing interviews I've ever seen with serial killers, and I've seen a bunch. I am not a proponent of the death penalty, but I certainly, you know, shed no tears for this guy going down in 93.
Now, to help us tell today's story, we have a friend of mine here in the studio with us, and he's going to walk us through his experience with a very bizarre case. Officer Jordan Merakian, hi.
Hi.
So tell us a little bit about your career in law enforcement, first and foremost.
Well, I've been a police officer for 20 years. I started my career in San Diego. And then a few years ago, I left, went to work for Laguna Beach PD for a while, where I worked major fraud, was a detective there. And then just recently, I transferred to the Seal Beach Police Department. So I've been up the coast.
Yeah, you've certainly been in it. So what is your favorite part of being a cop?
No day is the same.
Yeah.
It's always different. You deal with people pretty much at their worst, sometimes at their best, but rarely. And it's just an evolving career, and I couldn't tell you one day is the same as the next.
Did you see any weird shit in Laguna Beach, or was it just kind of chill? Because it was...
I probably saw the weirdest shit in Laguna Beach.
Really?
Out of the three. Yeah, because you're dealing with people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, but primarily wealthy people.
Right.
Who aren't used to hearing the word no.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that... involves a lot of salesmanship on my part to convince them that we're not going to take their trash out for them while they're on vacation or things like that. But you do see a lot of weird stuff in this career, and I could probably write a book about half the stuff I've seen.
Can you? And you're allowed to talk about all the things. You don't sign an NDA as a cop?
Nope. It's all public information. I mean, there are certain things I can't talk about. Domestic violence victims, sexual assault victims, I can't release their information.
Right.
But for the most part, this is all public information. And that's why journalists are filing public records information requests left and right, because it is public information. And police departments, especially nowadays, have to be more transparent about what it is that we're doing.
Right.
Well, speaking of cases in Orange County, I know you have a very interesting one to walk us through today that was based in Cyprus, right?
Correct.
Okay, so why don't you walk us through those? It was involving a groper, which is clearly a very terrifying kind of case, especially at random. These ones that happen when people approach you on the street. I know that the groping that we've discussed, the Trump stuff, whatever, these are people who know each other and there's some weird groping thing happening or it's initial meeting. What kind of groping is this? And walk us through this particular instance.
This kind of groping involves more of a fetish. As I've learned in my career, there's fetishes for everything. I mean, there are people that are into all sorts of weird shit.
That end up getting him arrested one day.
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, I was a baby cop. I was 26 years old, probably about 5 years into my career. I was a police officer in San Diego at the time, but I received a phone call about a suspect that the Cyprus Police Department was looking at. He'd been involved in multiple incidents, but most recently an incident where he had gone into a park. It was at the intersection of Bloomfield and Ball Road. So if you're familiar, that's a very residential area. He approached a 12-year-old girl, asked her what time it was, and this is back when we
had
watches, not our phones. And as I understood it, she looked down at her watch, at which time he reached out and he groped her over the clothes. So he essentially reached out and grabbed her chest.
And then left, and that was it?
Well, she screamed, and that caught the attention. As I said, there were residences around this park.
Right.
She screamed. He went running down the street, got into a white lowered Toyota truck. It was a very distinct truck, tinted windows. This is back when it was cool to like drop your truck, and took off at a high rate of speed. The witness who called 911 thought it was a purse snatch. So he took down the license plate of the truck, gave the license plate to police officers. They responded, talked to the victim. And that's how the case kind of mushroomed out from there.
See, I don't really understand, and maybe, you know, as a police officer, you can shed some light on this kind of groping, too. What's the payoff? Like, this is terrifying for, you know, but like...
I mean, maybe it's because he said it's like a fetish thing.
Yeah.
It's like they get off on the fact that they're...
I mean, I've interviewed child molesters. I've interviewed people that have committed crimes like this. And I guess the only relatable way that I can talk about... I wouldn't say it's a payoff, but it would be like if you're into tall people or you're into short people, these guys are into groping. That's their thing. So if I were to guess, and I'm not a psychologist or a criminal profiler, but they do it and it gives them some sort of like sexual gratification. So maybe later on when they're home, they can relive it or, you know, it's just what they're into.
Right. And I was doing research for this episode and I discovered that there's a word to describe this urge that people have to grope unconsenting victims. And it's called frauterism. Frauterism. Have you guys ever heard that word?
No.
I haven't heard.
I have not heard that word.
Me either.
I've
never heard that word.
So that's
is that like
a psychological
like fetish
term.
Sites online for frauterism?
I don't know. This is just a psychological term that is commonly used in the psychiatric community. But, you know, and groping is generally either defined by these people as or considered to be sexual battery, sexual groping, or unlawful touching. And in some jurisdictions, groping's considered criminal sexual misconduct. And if there's no penetration, that is. So groping can vary from state to state. And, you know, the areas of the body, I guess, that are most frequently groped include the butt, the breasts, vulva, and thighs on a woman. And the penis and testicles and buttocks on a man. And they generally use their hands, but pressing any part of their body against another person is generally considered groping.
And you have to kind of show that there is some sort of sexual gratification. That is one of the elements of it. When I say elements, like you have to prove as a cop that it wasn't like I walked by you and I accidentally bumped into you.
Right.
Or like you grabbed somebody's arm or something.
No, it's intentional.
Yeah. Right. It's intentional. It has to be what they would consider a private part.
Yeah. And does the intent have to be sexual?
No, it has to be grabbing a person's private parts without their consent.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been cases in the past where somebody smacks someone on the ass and they try and charge them with sexual battery and it just doesn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
It really all depends on
tone.
Each case.
Because it's tone. It's like, you
know. It definitely is tone. I mean, if when you think about it, we forgot one big case because we were talking about, obviously, the president. That was the biggest one. That became the biggest narrative of the election.
Right.
We forgot about Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Taylor Swift had that where a guy was having a picture taken with her and brushed his hand up against her ass.
Right.
And she sued.
So would you say, though, that was more about power, sexual gratification? I mean, that's where it really gets kind of gray.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why I was asking, is it more about, because we, you know, we always hear the term, everything is about sex except sex. Sex is about power. You know, you always hear that being said. With this, you would mention that if the touching was not necessarily sex, do you have to prove that in the court of law then that this was something that was for sexual gratification? If it was somebody that was rubbing their body up against even the side of somebody, say, because you see that a lot on subway cars,
mm-hmm.
Especially in New York City.
Right.
It's a big problem.
Right.
And New York City actually just had a group of women, and which I should have looked this up, but New York City has a group of women that have been going around the subway cars and trying to catch the people who are, they're kind of like the
vigilante,
like the vigilantes that are after the gropers.
I mean, it's not always hard to prove.
Yeah.
And like going back with this case, it was clearly obvious that the suspect here was doing it for some sort of gratification. It wasn't mm-hmm. just accidental. What compounded it, and I think what really got Cypress PD's attention is that he was doing it to somebody that was under the age of 18 and under the age of 14 for that matter.
12
years old.
Jesus.
So confusing for a 12-year-old and terrifying, like what, you
well,
know,
yeah, I mean,
a grown
I,
man.
Yeah, it's scary too because if that's happening to you from somebody that you don't know, it's like you don't know if they're trying to kidnap you or they're going to rape you or they have a gun.
Right.
Like,
right.
That's what makes it so terrifying and probably after with like PTSD or whatever from it, because it's like you have had no idea what was going to happen. And that's like the biggest invasion of privacy ever, especially as a child.
Yeah. And the narrative is definitely opened up. I mean, but you can go to Coachella, you can go to concerts, and this happens mm-hmm. all day.
Oh, yeah. It happens. Literally, I was just in Europe and it happened like five times.
Oh, yeah.
This, I think we're talking about something different than that.
Right.
And this
absolutely.
This is compulsion.
Right.
A child involved.
Yeah, the child.
And another thing is that, like you said, Jack, are they going to do more? Like, as a kid, are they going to drag me into their car? Are they going to hurt me? Mm-hmm. That's got to be the most confusing and terrorizing situation. So eventually it was revealed that he'd done this before, right? This particular perpetrator.
Right.
Can you build on that?
Well, yeah. And going back, I had mentioned I was a police officer in San Diego. So why am I getting a phone call about this? Right.
Right.
But I had a little bit of insight as to this suspect's prior history. And I'm not talking about prior history as far as groping, just who he was, because I'm from the area. I grew up in Los Alamitos, which is basically next door to Cypress. So I got the call from this detective. He told me that his suspect had admitted to it a number of times. And then during the interview, he dropped my name, which happens a lot.
Dun, dun, dun.
So when you get pulled over, if you know a cop or you're friends with a cop, people do it all the time. They'll say, oh, do you know Officer so-and-so? As if we're kind of all in the same room and we all know each other. There's thousands of us. But people,
because they think they can, like, get out of the crime.
Absolutely.
Or get out of the... Yeah.
You know, it's like if you show up at a club and you're not on the wait list, you're like, oh, well...
Got to drop a name.
So-and-so invited me here.
You realize that now every one of our listeners is going to drop your name if you're inside of California.
I know I am. I now have a cop friend.
Well, be careful, because there are some officers out there that don't like me. I'm sure that I used to train.
I don't believe that.
I tried
to be
nice.
You are the best. I don't believe that for a second.
But yeah, he calls me. He says, hey, I have this guy here in custody. I'm just giving you a courtesy call because he's mentioned your name. The only other time that's happened in my career was an ex-girlfriend who was about to have her car towed. And I said, tow it, you know. But he dropped my name. And I said, well, who's your suspect? And it was Jason Merakian, my brother.
Oh. That's not the call you want to get.
No. Especially at 26.
Gosh.
You know, my mother was still alive. Los Alamitos is a very small town. So if you see that name Merakian pop up in the local newspaper,
it's not a John Smith.
No, everyone knows who it is.
Yeah.
It's either Jordan or it's Jason.
Right.
And it's not me.
Well, thank God.
Not only that, it's like this isn't a DUI. This is very dark.
It's personal. Yeah.
There's children involved. How did you react to this when you first were alerted to all this?
I mean, obviously I was pissed off. I thought there must be some mistake. But then that very quickly changed because I had had some prior incidents with my brother, even when I was a teenager, where I just thought he was sort of off.
Right.
So I said, well, that's interesting. I don't know why he's dropping my name, but whatever you need, just let me know. And so the detective asked me kind of a little bit of a character history on my brother. Without going off into a tangent, he worked at Disneyland at the time, so...
Oh, I know that this is going to kill Billy.
Wow. He worked at Disneyland.
Yeah,
okay.
I knew this was going to kill
what?
Billy.
Billy is having an aneurysm.
What did he do at Disneyland? What was his job? Do you remember?
He worked in the store that's attached to Space Mountain.
Okay. So you get off the ride. You just had this magical experience through the stars.
Right.
And then you get off the ride and you're like, I've got to get something too. And obviously you always exit through the gift shop because that's how Disney does it.
Right.
And then you're like, I got to get a t-shirt. I got to get a figurine.
And Mr. Groper is cashing you out.
Yeah. Was there ever any incidents at Disney?
No. And
but that's actually interesting because that's a buffet right there for him.
Right.
Potentially.
Right.
You know?
And you'll find in a lot of cases, especially sex crimes, people put themselves in positions where they're going to have access. Now, I don't know if that's what my brother did.
Yeah, I was going to say, does that seem
it's debatable.
A likely
It's convenient.
Cause.
It's a convenient
right.
place of employment.
But then he never got... Because I feel like Disneyland would be the place that if he was doing it, he would have gotten in trouble very fast.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
Because Disney's got... They've got plainclothes detectives at Disney.
They do. They do. They have cameras.
Yeah, lots of cameras.
But, you know, as you'll find out as we get into this... I've had women come into the police station to tell me they were sexually assaulted, and then the very next thing that they say is, I don't want to report it. I just needed to come down here and let someone know.
God.
Well, we're required by law to at least write a report, and then we write Jane Doe.
Right.
And it happened a lot when I was a police officer in San Diego. I worked at San Diego State, so I was a campus cop. And it happened a lot even in Laguna Beach. You have tourists come into town. They go to a nightclub. They meet someone. Something happens. Some unfortunate event happens. And they come in and they say, look, I'm not even from here. I'm from Wisconsin. I'm from New York. I don't want to go through this, but you should know that this occurred.
Do they usually give a name or do they just say this is a guy that I met at the club?
No, it's just a guy that I met at the club. And they just, for whatever reason, they need to just get it off their chest, tell a police officer, let us know that it happened.
Do they usually do a rape kit or do
nope,
they?
They usually don't. Because there's a lot of misinformation out there about how those things happen, and there have been movies that have dramatized like the experience of it. We try to make it as respectful as possible, but it's still a very invasive
Absolutely,
procedure.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I found out about my brother, I sat on it for a while. I thought about calling my mother and letting her know. I eventually did, which was a very tough phone
call. It's like the worst phone call.
You know, we found out that he had done it before. I mean,
to kids?
Kids, adults, didn't matter. He didn't discriminate.
Interesting.
And what was he doing exactly?
He would run up to them and grope them. I mean, he would grab them. And, you know, my friends crack jokes about it, of course. They're like, hey, is your brother going to jump out of the bushes and grab my sister? And at the time, you know, I understood what they were doing. It was an uncomfortable situation. They wanted to make light of it. But I didn't know. I mean, and I'll tell you, when I was a teenager, I didn't start dating until 17 or 18, but there were times where I had my girlfriend over and he bust into my room, you know, just like, oh, sorry, wrong room. You know, it's like, dude, you lived in this house.
Yeah, you know what the right room is.
18 years, you know what the right room is. You know, so it really kind of, just looking back on my childhood and when I was a teenager all the way into my 20s, there were a lot of times where I was just kind of like, huh, you know, things start to really add up when you find out mm-hmm. information like that. So the reason why I got involved, I wasn't necessarily – I obviously wasn't the lead investigator, but the detectives needed to know, hey, do you know anything? Is there anything you can provide us with that he's not saying that can lead us to more victims? And as hard as it was, it wasn't a hard decision. It was just a hard experience. I gave them everything I knew.
Yeah.
Because he lawyered up. I mean, he wasn't going to talk. He gave them just enough information.
The hardest probably thing is going to be to talk to your mother. Were you able to talk to him?
It took me a long time before I did talk to him.
And what? How was that like?
Well, he stuck to his guns that this was purely because he was under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Mm. For that reason, my mother felt bad for him. She mortgaged the house, got him a good attorney. He ended up doing time for it, and he was a registered sex offender because of it. But I was waiting my entire early adulthood, I was waiting for that, I'm sorry that I did this to the family. I'm sorry that this happened. But it was always, I'm sorry about what they say I did.
Right.
So
he was never owning it. He was never taking
never,
it.
Never. No.
And so as far as, you know, the differences between rape and groping, and does one lead to another one? Were you thinking that? Were you thinking that if he hadn't been stopped, it could have led to something more?
I've always felt that any addiction is a gateway to a new one. Part of that is because I'm a jaded, cynical police officer, but part of it is just, you know, at some point you get tired of doing the same thing. At least I do. Like if I have, it's a terrible analogy, but if I have pizza 4 days in a row, by day five, maybe I want mushrooms on my pizza, or maybe I want a hamburger.
Right.
You know, so with my brother, I just go under the assumption that eventually he was going to graduate to something worse.
Right.
Because at some point, are you getting the same gratification out of doing the same thing for so many years?
Mm-hmm. They're going to get bored of it.
And it's debatable, but I personally think that, you know, eventually, and I had always said, I made no secret about it. I said, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always kind of felt that eventually something was going to happen.
There was a sociologist who was quoted in a 2011 article in New York Times named Scott Bahn, who's a professor of sociology at Drew. And he said that there's differences between what motivates a groper and what motivates a rapist. And there's a quote from him. The rapist is driven by a desire to control, dominate, and even sometimes seriously injure a victim, whereas a groper's motivation is for sexual gratification through inappropriate touching and violating the victim. And like you were saying, you know, a lot of times they will grope somebody and then run away and then do their business. You
right.
can this is a theater of the mind here. You can figure out what we're talking about and, you know, someplace else. But they also say that some gropers can move on to something more. Some, you know, it's like the, you know, one of the biggest things that's going on right now, like in the sex toy industry, is those child sex dolls, and they're saying there's a big debate as to whether they will actually satiate a child molester, and there's no freaking way that's going to happen because they're going to want to escalate and go to the next thing, which is a live kid.
They're selling these for the reason of child molesters, like to sell to?
What else would you do?
Well, I guess that's true.
Well, I have a question. Speaking of child molesters, what was the worst thing about this for you? Because putting myself in your position, if I could get past the weird fetish, if I could get past the groping, children.
Yeah.
Does your brother have children?
No.
But he's married.
Correct.
But was that your main point of concern? Because is it pedophilia? I don't really know what you would label this.
The child thing is what really throws it.
It makes it seem very dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, candidly, I think he chose his victims based on their vulnerability and not necessarily because they were children. I think being a child was a component of it because a 12-year-old may not haul off and hit you with the left hook as quickly as a 25-year-old, right? I'm sure, though, that when he was choosing his victims, he chose them because their location, the opportunity, they were probably isolated, and the vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know, and it can be said that, you know, while pedophilia does go to being attracted to children, part of it is also because, quite honestly, they're more vulnerable. They're less susceptible to being able to figure out what's going on because they haven't quite had that life experience.
Mm-hmm. And they're also less susceptible to tell.
That's what I was going to say, too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Was right. I feel like if it were me, I was kind of a naive 12-year-old. Something weird just happened.
You wouldn't register. Yeah.
Yeah. Some guy was just confused.
Right.
I don't know that I would tell someone about that. I'd be just embarrassed that someone grabbed me and just probably shame it away like I do
with everything. So a situation like this, he gets arrested and he admits to other situations where he's done the same thing to children.
Well, he got arrested.
The first time.
Yeah, the first
time. That's what I was going to get into. So, Jordan, tell us, these initial crimes were in 2000.
Right.
When was the next time your brother got in trouble?
Wait, and he went to jail for this?
Yes.
And he was a registered sex offender.
Correct.
And tell us, I know you told me that you guys were on the phone during a trip.
Yeah.
Lay it all out for us.
So, fast forward to 2016. I'm now on my way to Las Vegas, where he lives. I'm going to see the Conor McGregor-Nate Diaz fight. And I call him. You know, we had had, since the arrest in 2000, we had what I would refer to as a civil relationship. We'd sit there and have breakfast and really not say much to each other. But I call him and I said, hey, you know, I'm coming into town. I was with my girlfriend at the time. I'd like you to meet this person. And he said, oh, weird. I'm actually on my way to Orange County. In the entire time I've known my brother since he moved to Las Vegas, he was in Orange County maybe four times.
Interesting.
And I said, what are you doing going to Orange County? He said, oh, I'm going to Fullerton. I'm just going to get away for the weekend, you know, for my birthday. And my first thought was, who the hell goes to Fullerton?
Anybody that hasn't been to Orange County, Fullerton is not the place to go.
You know, your Fullerton listeners are probably going to MF me on your podcast.
No, I think they would concur.
But it's fine. The best thing in a Fullerton is like a Denny's.
No, we love the burbs, but it's not a vacation destination.
Right. No, it's not like you're going to Newport.
Right.
So I hung up the phone. And I actually said to my girlfriend at the time, I said, he's up to something. And I've always...
It's like you knew it was sketchy.
I've always felt there was something sketch about him. And, and so, you know, hung up the phone, went and saw Conor McGregor lose his fight. And I get a call from my brother's wife. And she says, your brother's been arrested. I don't know what it's for. Can you call Fullerton PD and find out what's going on?
Like, he's already dropped your name once. He can't do it again.
Right. And I'm thinking, here we go again. And now, to compound it, I'm a detective at the Laguna Beach Police Department.
Oh,
this is
man.
In my county.
Oh, no.
Now, to back up really quickly, every time there's an arrest of interest in Orange County, the detective that handles it will send out what's called a tracker's bulletin. So we send it to all the agencies, and we put that mugshot right there, and we say, arrest of interest,
oh,
this
man.
Person got arrested. So I'm already thinking, I'm a brand new employee with Laguna Beach PD. I'm now going to have to tell my command staff about this. And I can't believe he did this in my backyard.
He drove from Vegas.
Yeah, why did he do it there?
Why did he do it in your backyard?
That's so weird.
I don't know why, but I can tell you my guess is that if he does it in my backyard and then he goes back to Vegas, they're never going to find him.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's
right?
familiar with the area maybe.
Yeah.
And just.
So I call Fullerton PD. I end up talking to a detective and he says, look, you know, this thing's kind of hot right now. I can't really tell you anything other than it's basically the same thing that happened in 2000. And we have him in the interview room. And I think the detective probably thought I was going to try and interfere somehow, because that happens sometimes, you know. Police officers will call me when I arrest a family member, and they'll get on the phone with their family member and say, don't talk.
Yeah.
And I said, nope, same thing as with Cyprus. Whatever you need, just let me know. And ultimately, I ended up being a witness because he did call me. He did tell me he was on his way to Fullerton. I did have some background info on him.
Well, and when they had him in custody, didn't he confess to a lot of other attacks?
That's the scary part, yeah.
How many?
50 to 100 that he wasn't caught for.
Oh, my God.
Really?
In Henderson, Nevada.
Oh, so okay. He was doing it in Vegas.
Yeah.
And what was his M.O.?
Same thing. Yeah.
Did he always have a car? To run to?
So weird. With the Fullerton one, I mean, he goes to Cal State Fullerton, parks in the parking structure. A college student, 21-year-old girl, walks by, and he jumps out and he grabs her. And then he takes off running.
Wow.
That is so weird.
And, you know.
It seems very dangerous.
Like, shocking. Like,
it seems very.
It's so different. It's so different that, like, he could do this on a subway. I mean, I'm a thing from New York. Me and Alexis are from New York. On a subway, it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. You could get away with that, and somebody would not even be able to see you because there's so many people.
Oh, yeah.
In the throng.
And you wouldn't even think it's that weird.
This is different. There's prowling.
I know. This is prowling, and then this is grabbing somebody and really attacking somebody, freaking them out, even if they just jumped out of the bushes and said boo and then ran away.
No, there's a psychological component that seems very dangerous.
Yeah. Right.
And I know you know this, Jordan. I've run all this by you to make sure you're okay to talk about, because this is a family member. It seems so scary, you know?
And it does seem like it would escalate.
Well, and it seems compulsive.
Yeah. I guess for me as a family member and even as a cop, it's just why?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what's the
like,
point?
Where's the payoff, right? I mean, it's like...
And also, like,
what's the point?
Right.
Is this just what gets him off? Like, is that what it comes down to?
Is it scaring them too?
I don't know. It's just weird because it's like if it never did escalate after all those years and he did it so many times, but it was always the same kind of thing. Like, that's what's strange.
Well, that's the biggest question, not to make light of the 100 attacks, but I think the biggest question right after them is that, do you think it ever escalated?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I do. And here's the problem. And again, I'm going to preface this. You're talking to somebody who's a little bit cynical. Having dealt with victims of sexual assault, having dealt with victims of all kinds of crimes, people, for them, it's one thing to be a victim. It's a totally different thing to have the strength and the courage to walk into a police station, tell a complete stranger what just happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
Sexual assault, 1 out of 4 report it. I mean, I don't know the latest statistics, but I know when I was investigating sex crimes at San Diego State, 1 out of 4.
Yeah.
So you think about it, you know, and I don't want to paint the picture that my brother's a serial rapist. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there is a strong likelihood that it escalated, or he may have thought about escalating it. Now, his DNA is in a system called CODIS. So had it gotten reported and DNA was found, he would have been arrested for it. But who knows? I mean, who knows if it was even reported?
Sure.
You know, so it's like there's a lot of unknowns out there. I mean, I would love to sit down with him and ask him why, but I know that the answer I would get would piss me off so badly that I'd want to put him through a wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I mean, my brother and I are nothing alike, even physically. Like, you've seen pictures of him. We look nothing alike. I used to joke that my mom had an affair and with either my dad or his dad, but that's not the case. We are related. So, you know, I don't know. But do I think it escalated? I think if it didn't, it came pretty damn close.
Mm-hmm. There's just no way that it didn't.
It's something pathological.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it goes way beyond some guy that grabbed Taylor Swift's ass.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He's in the bushes staring at playgrounds. It just seems dangerous. I don't know. And to not be introspective enough in those moments where he's doing this,
what the hell is wrong with me?
Because it is that weird. You don't know what this person with this pathology is capable of necessarily.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and The RealReal makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For The RealReal, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The RealReal has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on TheRealReal.com using code FIRST. That's TheRealReal.com using the code FIRST.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Did he have regular relationships?
He's been married.
He's
since
been married.
1999.
And what does his wife think? Well, we obviously can't speak for her.
Well, I can speak for her.
He's like, screw it.
I called her and I said, what the hell? And I didn't say hell. I said a different word.
What the heck?
And she said he needs to pray more.
Pray it away, Jason.
God.
Pray it away.
It's just we're not, I don't want to offend your religious listeners, but Jesus is not going to help my brother. There are things going on with him that, you know, I don't care how much therapy you've had. I don't care how much introspection you've had or your rock bottom moment. If you're addicted to something, you're always going to be addicted to it. When people say that they're sober, I applaud them for that. But the true people that talk about sobriety say it's a daily struggle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, so it's not like one day you wake up and go, wow, that was wrong. I shouldn't have groped that girl. I'd never want to do that again. That's his thing.
So where is he right now?
He's living in Las Vegas.
And he's a registered sex offender.
Yeah.
So what does that mean in terms of things cannot happen for him?
Also, did he go to jail after the second time?
Yeah, he went to jail for almost a year and a half.
Okay.
I was going to say, what's the sentence usually like for like a groping? And what is that considered if you get arrested for it? Sexual assault?
Battery,
sexual battery.
It's state to state.
It's different.
It's a misdemeanor.
Okay.
That's still a misdemeanor, yeah?
Yeah. Over the clothes is a misdemeanor.
Over the clothes is a misdemeanor.
Yeah, so what he did to the girl in Fullerton, that was a misdemeanor.
If it was a child, though, it would have been a felony.
It was.
In Fullerton?
In Fullerton, no, it wasn't.
Oh, yeah. Right. Was it a college girl?
College girl.
Was this a trial, or did he just plead?
He knew, like, I better plead to this right now.
Right.
And what they did is they gave him the maximum allowable sentence that they could, which was a little bit under a year and a half. But all they had was that one case. They didn't have multiple victims. It's not a crime to go in and admit to 50 to 100 incidents. You're not going to get charged if you don't have a victim.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. My theory is that during that year and a half, they were actively searching for other victims and they just didn't find any.
And Jordan, I want to ask, how did your family react to this, your parents?
Well, the first time, because my parents both passed away in 2012,
mm-hmm.
so 6 months apart. So when this happened back in 2000, I think my mother really wanted to believe that he didn't do it. I just played along with that. I didn't want to come into the house and be like, let me tell you what really happened. Thanksgiving dinners were super awkward because I would just sit there and glare at him for
months. I'm sure. That's nice of you, though, to do that for your mom. I know. I'm sure a mom's in huge denial. They don't want to accept that.
Oh, yeah.
Son. You are an amazing person. She probably is a good mom.
She's a great mother.
Self-blame and all this.
Yeah.
And she was dealing with that other thing
nature.
That we talked about. So.
Which we want to... Will you share the other thing with us?
My career has been kind of strange in that I started out working for a campus because no one would hire me. I was 21. I was a baby when I started. I worked on a college campus where there was something very commonly known as cruising. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar? Mm-hmm. So,
well, Billy's not familiar, but
well, also explain.
I'm familiar with the term. I'm also familiar with the Al Pacino movie.
Explain cruising to our listeners.
So cruising is essentially when two men meet up in a public area, typically a restroom, to engage in sex, and the sex typically is anonymous. That's where the term glory hole came from. You have one person in one stall, another person in another stall. There's a hole in between, and you can imagine what happens after that.
I have a question about this. Before, like, the apps and stuff, how would two people find each other?
That's a great question. They would literally write on the stall wall.
Oh, it's like the numbers.
Yeah, meet me here between.
Billy's like, yeah, I remember it well.
That's where that came from.
And you know, before I knew what cruising was, and I was just a regular cop, I walk in, it's like, meet me here for oral sex between 2 and 3. I'm like, how come this never happens, like, in real life? No, I'm just kidding. But no, in all seriousness, I walk into the bathroom, and you would see it on the stall wall. 5'8", 215 pounds, beautiful frat boy looking for men between the ages of 18 and 21 between 2 and 3 p.m. That's how they did it before Craigslist, Tinder, Bumble, and all the apps that are out there, Grindr.
Yeah.
So here I am. I'm this new cop trying to make a name for myself. And I walk in to a restroom, and I see it, and I don't know the first thing about it. Well, that particular day, San Diego PD... came in and they said, hey, we're doing a decoy operation and we need volunteers. And I didn't know what they were talking about. So I raised my hand.
Oh my God.
And this detective is like, okay, you know, you're our guy, right? Now, at the time, I was probably about 50 pounds lighter. I had spiky hair. This was in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I had frosted tips.
Oh, hell yeah. Mark McGrath.
I was a boy band member. I called my mother. I'm like, Mom, I'm working undercover.
All excited.
I'm going to be dealing. I'm going to be slinging dope on the street. I'm going to be doing all this stuff.
That is kind of exciting, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I show up to work the next day, and they take me to a park, and they're like, okay, this is what we're doing. And it was cruising. And I found myself basically at the college and also throughout the city going into restrooms and being propositioned by other men.
Restrooms of what?
Home Depot, JCPenney, City College, San Diego State.
Oh.
It goes on everywhere.
Oh, I thought it was like at like certain like bars or something.
No. You will never look at restrooms the same again if I tell you what to look for. It's happening everywhere.
Still?
Oh, yeah.
Still with the writing on the walls?
Not necessarily. It's more...
Tindery?
Yeah. It's more like Craigslist.
Less analog, more... Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
The op ended. I did one at the college, and then I realized, holy crap, my dad got arrested for this when I was 13. Like, you can't make this stuff up. So my dad, and I'm not ashamed to say this, my dad was gay. It's unfortunate how he was forced to come out because he was arrested for cruising. Mm. So the Buena Park Police Department arrested him over near Knott's Berry Farm. I was 13 at the time, and he called and said, put your mother on the phone, and the marriage ended right there.
You know,
my mom was like, we're done. So my dad, because he wasn't openly gay, had to cruise. And I found myself, after this op ended, kind of feeling sorry for these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because most of the men I was arresting were straight. They were quote-unquote straight
their
men.
Lives
oh,
just,
shit.
Yeah.
You know.
So it was a huge kind of conflict that I dealt with until one of the detectives pulled me aside and he said, look, we're not doing this to target the gay community. We're not doing this to shame people. We're doing this because kids are coming in here to use the restroom. Homophobic individuals are coming in here to use the restroom. We're doing this to protect people from participating in this activity. I mean, one of the guys was HIV positive. if the wrong person goes in at the wrong time, you could have something worse on your hands. But I found it incredibly ironic that I, quote unquote, made a name for myself on the police department arresting the very same individuals that my father, you know, was involved with.
So when your father got arrested and you were 13,
right?
What did you know about that arrest at that age?
And I knew everything.
Oh, you did?
So my mother was full disclosure.
Okay.
Wow.
So my first, I mean, I hadn't even been in a relationship yet. And she said, you know, this is what your dad got picked up for. Now, he said he was framed. And at the time, I wasn't a cop. So I was like, maybe he was. And as I got into law enforcement, you hear, you remember that senator that got arrested at the airport years ago? I
don't know if you remember. With the foot tap.
Yes. Yep. So when
with the what?
The foot tap.
Foot tapping is a signal that they give before they engage in it.
What? Like where?
They sit. Because you're into two different stalls.
Yeah, they sit on the toilets and they tap their feet like, hey, I'm here. And it lets you know that that person is
And then
down.
You go into one stall?
Two.
With the hole?
Yeah.
What if they don't have a hole in the stall?
Then you go into one stall, I guess, but typically there's a hole.
I want to know logistics.
Yeah, so it's, you know.
This is how much of a feminist Jack is. Jack's like, there's going to be a hole somewhere in this equation.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not something that I'm ashamed of. It's, I feel bad that my father was outed that way, but, you know, in the long run, it definitely created some tension between he and I because that's what I was doing for an assignment for a few months.
So how did you feel about when you started doing that assignment and you knew that that was what your dad was arrested for? Like, did you feel guilt or?
It didn't even dawn on me until it was over.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I didn't even, all I was thinking is I got to.
Well, it's probably was like a total defense mechanism.
I don't know.
In his brain?
If you realize it after, yeah, because, I mean, think about it like a young budding police officer. It was an opportunity as a non-psychologist.
With your professional opinion.
My non-professional opinion. Yeah. Like, it didn't occur to you till after, but it did occur to you.
It occurred, yes.
Subconsciously.
So, yeah, I think it's that you didn't want it to occur because you wanted to do a good job.
I wanted to do it,
take your job seriously.
Yeah, and I did. I mean, I was a good-looking guy in 2000. Not so much now, but I was a skinny little, like, frosted-tip, teeth-whitened guy.
I need a pick.
Don't be modest.
Wait, okay, so when you were doing this, though, you were in the park? You didn't actually go to a bathroom?
I went to the bathroom.
Oh, you did go to the bathroom.
Balboa Park. But yeah, they nicknamed me Bait, which was, I never lived that down.
That's
but,
your new nickname for our friendship.
Yeah. And my now friendship. Yeah.
So, you know,
group
I mean.
So
for listeners, if they just say Officer Bait, that won't work.
Or a Bateman.
But you know, I mean, in all seriousness, this has nothing to do with the gay community.
Yeah.
My father being gay, you know, it's like Kevin Spacey when he had that horrible statement that he released
after.
Oh, God. It's like, dude, you're a pedophile. Being gay does not.
This is not the time to come out.
Right. So it was just a very weird time for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was dealing with my brother getting arrested. I was cruising. Not really. And then
undercover cruising.
Yeah. And then 16 years later, I'm a detective, or 15 years later, and I'm dealing with my brother all over again.
God.
Yeah, you've been through some
shit. Like, what are the chances?
And did you talk to your dad about that assignment?
No, I never did. Mm. Yeah, I
you're, you know, a good son.
The words "I'm gay" didn't come out of my father's mouth until right before he died.
Really?
He never really, you know, I'd go to his house in Vegas, and he lived in Vegas as well. He'd have pictures of, like, muscular cowboys all over the apartment. I'm like, Dad, it's okay.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm, you know, I have a friend
that
stays with me. Yeah, he's like, you know, those are his posters. Yeah, he was just, I mean, my dad was a Catholic Armenian. So it was like the double sword. You can't admit something like that, especially growing up when he grew up. In his era, I mean, he was born in 1932.
Yeah.
Being gay was not acceptable.
Yeah.
That's really an incredible story. So we've got those. You were connected to two, which is a double for us here on the first degree.
So
first
wild.
Degree from two.
And, you know, when it comes to groping, though,
whether or not you know something is going to escalate, if it is going to escalate and they do get caught in their groping stage, they go to jail for what? A year, maybe? It's like, is that really going to change anything, like, at the end? Like, is that going to make them stop groping and stop escalating? Like,
I don't know. And we have here listed on our outline from the research we did red flags that one could possibly point out. But these red flags that I'm seeing are most of the people I've dated in my entire life. So sexual entitlement. Yeah. Join the f-ing club. Unwanted touching. Everyone in every country. Persistence. Everyone I've ever dated. Isolation. Yeah. Guys who like you try to get you alone. So we meant to initially, you know,
this is going to be red flags, but they're really not red flags.
Yes, they're not. And they're up for interpretation. And there's going to be a myriad of, you know, facets that affect whether or not you feel any danger from any of these, you know? So it's like, it's very difficult. And that's why I think
it's like the grayest area ever.
So gray, because some of this sounds like flirtation to me, which might be my problem.
And some of it, you like.
It's just an alpha male.
Yeah, and as far as seeing one of those red flags, oh, if they want to just get you alone, then that's not necessarily going to be that bad, especially if you want to be alone with them. But if you add up all four, especially the unwanted touching, I think that's the biggie right
Unwanted touching, I feel like, is the actual red flag in this situation.
Well, right. That's the thing. Like, people talk about groping. It falls either way. This person could never escalate, or they could. You know, it is like an indicator of someone grappling with some psychological propensity.
To get back to your brother, and we were talking about, did they give him any therapy, your brother?
No. And
no, I mean, see, that's,
yeah, it's,
that's the crazy thing.
There's therapists that are paid by the county that are in prisons, but what kind of quality therapy are you getting from that?
Right.
You know, I'm looking at these indicators, and it's funny because people have always said, like, how can you tell? Like, because we don't have a crystal ball. And there's always that kind of, if you ask people, like, even when you're asking me about my brother, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, there were certain things that just didn't seem right.
He just seemed off.
He just seemed off. But being off is not against the law, right? So it was like, well, how do we know? I mean, I will say that there was a heavy use of porn when we were teenagers, but we're also teenage boys, right? So a lot
normal.
Of teenage boys are looking at porn.
I had a question about that I just remembered. Did they search his computer or anything for, like, child porn?
No, there's only so far that they can go. We're sitting here talking about groping, and obviously some of the victims were under 18, under 14, but the correlation between being a child sex predator and being a groper, there's a big gray area because the victims were all ages. I can't sit here and say that my brother was a child sex predator. I can say that he's a sex offender, right? I can say that there were certain indicators, but then again, he had healthy relationships with girlfriends in high school all the way up until when he was married. So, you know, my unqualified theory is that there's just something in his brain that's that on-off switch. It's on when it should be off.
Yeah.
You know, there's just something that's not working. And it may sound to the listeners, even if my brother hears this, that I'm throwing him under the bus. But when you've had a certain amount of time to get right with yourself and you haven't gotten right with yourself, the 2000 incident, I was telling Alexis, I won't forget it. I can move past it. I won't even forgive it. But once you do it again, you can't go back and say that that was a one-off thing.
You know better.
Come right.
On. Well, admitting to between 50 and 100, that's a big margin. Also, too.
What so do you think he was doing it the whole time in between?
I think he's been doing it
forever.
And, you know, there's research out there that says serial killers start out abusing animals, right? So you can point to all these things. I mean, me personally, I just look for those weird indicators, those weird things about people that just don't seem to add up.
Well, also, you know, one of the biggest things that we talked about here as a takeaway is if you are a victim of somebody jumping out of the bushes and groping you,
gotta report it.
You got to report it.
As hard as it is,
report it and make sure, you know, obviously it's going to be one of the most traumatic moments of your life, but try to get as many details as possible because there's a good chance that this guy has done this before and doing it again. And then there is that other chance that it could
escalate. And the sad reality is, and I'm going to say it, I feel like I've earned the right to say this. I hope that the people that do report it run into a police officer that cares enough to pay attention. Because in every police department, in every county, there are certain cops that are retired on duty. And if you get one of those officers, ask to see another one. That's well within your right. Not all of us are dedicated to what we do. Some of us are just there to collect a check. And every police officer knows who those officers are. And when they get dispatched to certain calls, we all kind of sit back and go, okay, this is going to be a half-assed investigation. you know. So,
but you know, that's not unusual. That's every profession.
Every profession.
There's complacency everywhere. Right. So,
but it just sucks. Like within like a, it's like you're supposed to trust a cop and think that they have your back.
I always say that every profession you have good people and bad people. Right. It's just that the margin of error really is a lot smaller.
But think about it. If you blow this off, like I always used to tell my trainees, if you blow this off and don't treat it like it's important. If the woman comes in and says, my boyfriend was beating me, and you say, well, you know, that sucks. I'll just take a half-assed report. And then 3 weeks later, the boyfriend kills her, and you didn't at least suggest getting a restraining order or maybe even follow up and arrest him, right?
Yes.
Do you want that on your conscience for your career?
Oh, no.
I don't.
No.
Yep. So, you know.
You have a hard job.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a lot of hobbies. It keeps me sane. But, you know, with my brother, and I don't know how we're doing on time, but with my brother and my father, those two, I want to reiterate, totally separate.
Yeah, right? Of course. Absolutely.
It's not genetic, I don't believe. My brother has dealt with a lot of problems in his life. He was bullied, and he had some drug and alcohol substance abuse issues, but none of that gives him a pass, right? None of it gives him a pass. We've all had hard shit happen to us, right? But my hope for him, because we're not speaking anymore, as of last year, he actually called me and said, I can't have a relationship with you anymore. And I was like, well, he made it easy on me. I don't know why he did that, but if he called me tomorrow, I'd talk to him. He's still my brother. But I can't trust him. I don't have kids, but if I ever have kids, there's no way in hell.
No.
Sorry. You will not be anywhere near him.
Yeah.
It's a sad reality, you know? I mean, I'm already super protective over people I care about. I can only imagine what would happen if I had kids running around.
You were super courageous for chatting with us about it. You've been so candid with me. He told me this on the set of a show. Very candidly, I was almost protective of him telling me about it because I didn't want to exploit your story.
I appreciate it.
But being candid about this is so helpful because given how prevalent these kinds of crimes are, these people are in people's families.
Oh, yeah.
You're in law enforcement, which the implications are even greater.
I mean, these people are baseball coaches, cops, doctors.
Disneyland employees.
Look at Dr. Nasser over at MSU.
Oh, yeah. God.
Right? My life, unfortunately, has turned into this person who walks around all day giving everyone a second and third look.
Well, yeah.
Like, why are you volunteering as a baseball coach?
Why are you working at Disneyland?
Without kids. No, there was a thing in the same article where these indicators that most of the men I know have, it says it's like there was a whole other section about how to spot someone who may be leaning towards child molestation, volunteering for activities involving kids without having kids.
Right.
Yeah, it's
which is weird. Yeah.
It's weird.
Wanting to be a baseball coach to volunteer for Little League without having your own kids is odd.
No, it's the same thing why I think that adults that are obsessed with Disneyland that don't have kids are weird.
Billy has kids, so you're out.
I know.
Billy.
I had kids specifically, so I can go to Disneyland.
Well, even weirder, Billy.
If people complain about how expensive Disney costs, believe me, you haven't seen,
I'm good Disney, for one of these.
Billy has a monorail tattoo for all of you.
I know, you told me.
Well, I'm looking at this list. I am persistent. Yeah. I don't do the unwanted touching, the sexual entitlement.
There you go. Exactly.
It's so fine. It's
you,
just
you
like
want
most,
to take out all of the.
It's like
all the
most of these are just men.
General.
I do want to say though, forget this list. Like we said about these crimes, it's tone.
Yeah.
So for those of you listening, it's tone. Look at someone's behavior, and it's not necessarily
and it's like circumstantial.
What it is on paper, it's how does it feel?
You always thought something was odd about your brother, and you could maybe never put your finger on it, and now retrospectively, it obviously makes sense.
Of course, and look out for some of these, not even red flags that are given to you in these stupid articles, but trust your feelings.
Trust your gut. And report something, even if it seems very minuscule.
Right.
You could be
absolutely
saving somebody
else as well. I think that's the biggest takeaway is that as hard as it might be to report it.
So if you happen to catch one of these weird behaviors,
you never know who you could be stopping.
That's like we always say, take note of the people around you. After all, only you can prevent serial killers.
Only you
he took the tagline out of my mouth. Anyways, we're trying this new tagline. Do you like it? Only you can prevent serial killers.
They're going to love it.
Follow us on Instagram @TheFirstDegree @AlexisLinkletter.
This is another
another Alexis Linklater roaming around?
I'm the only one.
I don't know. Do you have an Instagram that you want people to follow? Jordan's going to be famous, by the way. He's playing himself on a TV show.
For CBS.
You'll have to stalk Alexis's followers to find me.
There you go.
It's at Enforcer.
Close. Enforcer Fullback 44.
Enforcer
Fullback 44. That is such a cop 44. Instagram, and I love it.
That is the name itself terrifies me.
Well, it was a football team that I played for up until 2 years ago. It was a semi-pro football team in San Diego.
Terrifying, and I love it.
It's so scary.
So follow Jordan and watch his, Google him. He rescues dogs.
I know. It's so great. I need to see this.
Yes.
Trying to be a firefighter.
Also follow me at Jack Manick.
Thank you, Jordan.
That's it. Thanks for coming on.
Only you can prevent serial killers.
Some lines in this podcast were quoted directly from Murderpedia, Dr. No's Guide to Serial Killers, and The Independent.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.